Hello and welcome to the Manga Splaining Season 1 recap episode. Technically 26, but really more of a bonus episode where we look back at all of the manga that we covered for people that don't really read manga. Hosted by Deb Aoki, David Brothers, Chip Zdarsky, and myself, Christopher Butcher. You can follow along online usually at mangasplaining.com, but I literally can't imagine doing show notes for this episode. It's going to be all over the place. So here we go. Yeah, we did 26 of these, or 25. We just recorded the 25th. I'm really proud that we saw that through. That's really good. Thank you all so much. That was really fun as a season. And I'm glad we're all going to do season 2. That's kind of surprising as well.
Well, it depends on how contract negotiations work out.
Yeah, Fair. Things are pretty intense.
Well, I hope this might be the last episode. It was nice chatting with you all. Take care. We did a lot of different manga. It felt like a lot of different manga, but we added up some stats from the first season based on things that we had covered. And I was actually really surprised in this section I call Stats for Stats Nerds. Of the 25 titles we covered officially, we're not counting the two sponsored episodes, which was Yakuza Lover and Zom 100. We covered 15 seinen manga, 2 Jose, 5 Shonen, 2 Shoujo, and 1 straight up other, which is the delight that we like to call What the Font, which is just not anything as far as we can.
Unclassifiable.
Tell. Unclassifiable manga. And I think that really speaks to, you know, seinen being men's manga. We've talked a lot about these categories. Deb, you and I were talking a couple of nights ago about how basically the categories maybe don't mean anything anymore, which I think is really interesting because you look at the seinen titles that we covered and it's like A Bride's Story, Akira, and Yotsuba. And it's just like, no, that doesn't mean anything. So I found that to be a little bit interesting. I will say that we, out of 25 episodes, maintained a rough, you know, not that gender is a binary, but we maintained a rough gender parity with 12 books by ladies and 13 by dudes. And even if you add in the bonus manga, it was still like 13 and 14. So that's pretty good for a manga industry that is like, quite honestly, publishing a lot more manga by dudes than by ladies in general. So that was kind of nice, despite not having a lot of Jose or Shoujo in our reading areas. We covered 6 one-shots, which is to say self-contained volumes, and 18 series that were ongoing or longer than a couple volumes, which is much to Chip's chagrin.
I love those 6 one-shots.
Wait, does Paradise Kiss count as one of the one-shots?
Which one?
Paradise Kiss.
I counted it as one of the one-shots. It was only one one-shot. Fuck you. Here's the interesting thing, though. I think I double checked this because it doesn't seem right. We only covered one book by a creative team. That was Oishimo, where it was a separate writer and an artist, and the rest were all single creators. Our single creators, obviously, in many cases with assistants and whatnot. And that's fascinating to me, considering how many of the big series these days, especially some of the Jump series like some of the big series these days are writer-artist teams. One Punch Man is the one that comes most immediately to mind. And then, David, you, in the Saint Young Men episode, wanted to put together a tally of the translators and letterers in the books we discussed. And then that seems to have happened. Would you like to discuss that section?
Yeah. So it's sorted into translation/adaptation heroes. Jocelyn Allen is the MVP with 4 books, What the Font, BL Metamorphosis, Frank and Fran, and Even Though We're Adults. Elizabeth McFarlane with 2 books, Yone of the Dawn and BL Metamorphosis. And Joe Duffy with 2 books, Akira and Naruto. And the lettering champs were Lise Blakesley with 3 books, Nozaki-kun, Yone of the Dawn, Saint Young Men, Evan Hayden with 2 books, Akira and Panorama Island, and Abigail Blackman with 2 books, Delicious in Dungeon and Yotsuba. And I think it's kind of funny that all the ones with more than one book kind of have like at least one really good book in their list of credits, you know?
And what about
getting
the
good
other
people
books
do good
have?
Work? I mean, some books are just good. Others are like Akira, you know?
Yeah.
I'm surprised that some of the people that I know for doing good, you know, good manga lettering aren't on the list yet. And it just, when I was pulling together a list, it was just kind of amazed me. Like, there are a lot of people who work in translation and lettering and that aren't necessarily, you know, like household names to me. I think it just speaks to how many people are in this industry.
Yeah.
Who are kind of unsung heroes, honestly.
Much bigger than we've given it credit for sometimes, but also like Yeah, I feel that when we're trying to choose books sometimes too, where it's just like we did 25 books come out every single week, you know, like the number of people, like the number of manga that are being published, but also the number of people that are working in this industry is massive. So,
but are they any good?
Find out on season 2 of Manga Explaining.
Meanwhile, our top commenters on the website, where you all come and say nice things about the show notes, thank you, are Miguel Corti and Erica Friedman, who show up kind of every week to say, you know, to check in with the books that we're reading. Really appreciate that. We have some amazing Twitter and Insta folks that are commenting all the time, and we really appreciate them. And a special shout out to our friend Eva Volin, who was our only special guest in season 1, despite the fact that we kept talking about having more guests and bringing people on. Eva, you're the MVP.
Chris, it's a pandemic, man.
It'll happen. It'll happen. We'll do more.
It'll happen.
I'm going to do one at least, and we'll go from there. So yeah, the format for this show, I wanted to do a look back at every episode basically and just talk about some of the things that, you know, what have we thought about the books since we read them, in some cases, you know, like 5 or 6 months ago, in some cases, you know, 2 weeks ago, and we've seen, and some of them actually were discussing them before you've all heard the episodes. So that's interesting. We also,
by the time they hear this, they'll have heard them all.
Yeah, they'll all be out.
Hopefully.
Be out. But we don't know what you thought of the Frank and Fran episode, and frankly, we can't wait to find out. So starting off, episode 0 was just sort of an introduction episode. I numbered it 0 because we didn't actually talk about a book. But it's interesting that we talked about a lot of titles that we ended up talking about over and over and over again through the season, like Vagabond, like Lone Wolf and Cub, like Hajime no Ippo, which has kind of become a running gag, and Mizan Koku and Ranma one half. Or Rama half. And it's interesting that these are books that we haven't chosen yet. And I look at that list, and for me, it's just all of them are massive. Like all of them are at least 24 volumes, like huge series. You know what I mean? And I think it's one of the things that's maybe going to make it hard to choose really iconic series as the thing as this goes on, because like these are just big, big titles. You know what I mean? Like how do you do them justice only reading one volume out of a 28 volume masterpiece, you know?
But I think what's interesting too, like what I think what's great about having Chip's perspective is that when does a manga that someone recommends to you something worth keeping reading, right? Mm-hmm. Like you know, like mm-hmm. sometimes it's like the first volume is you need to be told this. The first 2 or 3 volumes are a little rough, but keep going. When you get to volume 3, it'll find its stride and you'll be hooked. But you need to know that, because if otherwise you read volume 1, like I guess maybe my experience with Fullmetal Alchemist, for example, mm-hmm. like I maybe read volume 1 and go, it's okay. But I know everyone loves it. So when does it get good?
Yeah, it's easier with TV shows, because that's always a comment when someone's trying to get into a TV show. They're like, oh, well, by episode 5, it gets good. Or by the end of season 1, it gets good. But because it's such a passive thing, I can just sit there and just kind of zone out through those like 4 episodes.
Mm-hmm. And it doesn't ask you to pay another $10 to find out what's next, right?
Yeah, exactly. Whereas reading manga, I'm just like, oh, I'm not going to sit down and keep reading this just to get to something that might be good.
Yeah, and speaking as a guy who's 1 episode from the end of Fullmetal Alchemist Brotherhood for the 2nd time, like it gets great.
Oh, okay.
It really goes places.
I trust you, David.
Yeah, but a lot of it for me is like recommending manga is one thing. Recommending manga to Chip is one thing. And recommending manga to Chip for us to talk about on the podcast is a whole other thing.
Yeah.
Yes.
So I think there are books that I think Chip would like that I don't recommend, because I know it's more like you would like this as a normal human being who does not have to host a podcast about it kind of a thing.
I'd love an example of that.
A lot of the weirds, like Kakegurui, actually, I feel like would be a weird read for the podcast, because it's like the hardcore fan service gambling manga. But I think like you might actually get a kick out of it. It's just it's not very deep. The way a lot of the books we've been discussing have been deep or have had like context surrounding it. It sort of just is what it is. And that's admirable. Like it makes it really entertaining and really fun.
Yeah, that's fine. Like not every book has to be deep.
Doesn't have to be Criterion Collection manga.
Yeah. I guess it would give us a short episode of the podcast.
Yeah.
I would love to read Kakegurui and Kaiji together.
Yeah. See, that is the sort of thing I would like to recommend.
Like, these are 2 gambling mangas.
Fun to read.
Yeah.
Versus fun to like perform a discussion about, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's interesting because I was really thinking, I don't remember what episode it was, but we talked about how I was choosing stuff and I was choosing favorites, but there's still a couple favorites that I haven't chosen because they're so personal to me, but also because I can't figure out, like, Tatsumi's work. Mr. Tatsumi was like a friend, an actual friend, produced great manga that's really important to me. I would be devastated if I recommended that manga and y'all didn't like it. And I think you would be nice to me about it, but I think if I got the sense that you didn't like something that was that important to me, so maybe I'll never recommend it for this podcast, even though I really love it. You know what I mean? So
I think now we know your weakness.
Yeah, right. Now you're going to recommend it just to hurt me. It's good. I like that, actually.
If it helps you any, I really love his work too.
Yeah.
So. Well, there you go. I got one ally.
But, I think my version of that is something like Bleach, where I love it and there are a lot of reasons to love it, but it's so up and down or rocky or however you want to describe it. Like, there are parts I think are perfect. There are parts that are less good. And it would make, like, you need the context of the less good parts for the good, really good parts to really hit. Mm. And that's a lot to ask of someone for an hour long podcast.
Yeah. Yeah, another consideration too is a lot of your picks are things that you read years ago. So maybe you won't like it as much now, rereading some of these choices.
Yeah. Well, I felt that way about 7 Billion Needles. I mean, I'm on Wikipedia saying I loved it, and I read it again. I'm like, I don't think it's the greatest book I ever read, honestly. But it was, in the moment, I thought it was pretty good.
Well, you were young and naive.
And I'm more jaded now.
Yeah.
Speaking of choices, you guys let me pick Akira Volume 1 for the first episode, which is very kind. Thank you. We just finished talking about Akira Volume 2. We talked so much. There was so much ground to cover in that episode. And then so much that I had written notes for and not gotten to, that's why I started the show notes, so that I could be like, and I found this website that was cool, and I found this website, and here's the original pages before he redrew them from Marvel, and all that kind of stuff. The things that people joined in and shared stuff. Like, there's some really great comments on Akira Episode 1 where people are like finding cool shit on the internet and sharing it. And that's kind of where I come up from, like blogging about comics and like finding the good stuff and trying to share it with everybody. And this is a different way to do that, but I can't really think of a way to do that exactly, talking to people. So for me, the big thing was actually coming up and like, oh, I'm going to do show notes for every episode and maybe go into depth on some of that stuff. But the thing I noticed for the rest of us when I re-listened to that episode recently is sound effects, lettering. It was such a big part of that first conversation where we were talking about the difference between the Kodansha edition, the Dark Horse edition, like where that came from, pulling from these like French sound effects and stuff like that. And we've kind of become known on social media for being the podcast that like goes out of its way to talk about lettering, which I think is hilarious because it's such a big part of comics, like in how they look on the page. And it's fascinating to look back at that now and see that was right there in the first episode. And
that's us. Like, it's not necessarily an episode thing. It's like Chip works in comics. I work in manga. Chris, you've done both. Deb, you've worn a lot of hats. I think we all know about the labor involved and like how much that matters.
It's interesting too, because that lettering discussion, I feel like you read a review, right? Like, you read a review or you listen, you know, even to a podcast sometimes, and those like invisible things no one really comments on them unless they're shit, like unless they're really bad. You know what I mean? Whereas I feel like in that episode, we went out of our way to like praise these things that were really interesting and different. So yeah, straight up, I actually really like that part of that episode. We had a lot of fun on the first episode. Don't get me wrong. Like, it wasn't like I'm grasping at straws. It was actually really cool. Still our best episode, or most downloaded episode. But I think it's just because it automatically downloads when you subscribe. Yeah, the other thing that I did in that episode that we talked about a lot is we compared Kira to TV series. And we actually don't maybe mention TV at all anymore, and how manga and even serialization relates to TV. And I think it's maybe, for me, I don't really watch a lot of TV anymore. Do you guys think about it in those current terms, the manga we read versus TV shows?
I mean, I literally just talked about people recommending TV shows.
In episode?
Just now.
I don't watch a lot of regular TV. I'm so marinated in this culture, I watch anime if I watch TV. So it's been a while since I've watched an episodic TV show. Like, all the Marvel series, for example, are basically just spoiled completely. Constantly. So I just gave up getting too invested in them. Mm. And then other types of TV shows, I don't know. It's just it's not my habit anymore because I don't have a TV with, I don't channel surf anymore. I very purposely watch things unless people recommend shows to me and say, "Hey, you got to watch Bridgerton. It's full of sexy time."
Well, that's a good impression of me.
I'll take one for the team and say that I watch a ton of TV because I work from home and I need like noise to focus.
Oh.
So I've been like watching Star Trek TNG for the first time, Justified for like the fifth time. Mm. And yeah, Justified is so good.
So good.
And I think in that first episode, it was an easy way to kind of find our footing in terms of how to talk about manga in this way.
Yeah.
Even though, you know, we're all experienced doing it, you know, like podcasting on like this, I think it's fairly new to all of us. And I think as we got more comfortable discussing manga for manga's sake, like it sort of fell by the wayside because there's a language and a approach, a context that's unique to manga that we can reference now, essentially.
Mm, that's a good point.
Yeah, that makes sense.
In episode 2, we actually covered Delicious in Dungeon, which is maybe a lot more like an episodic TV series where they're just sort of building things. And I forgot this until I re-listened to the episode, but I'm like, I actually asked Chip what he thought first before I asked you guys. And all he said was, "What the fuck is this?" And that was like his whole response to Delicious Invasion, the D&D themed manga where people eat the monsters. And in retrospect, I think that couldn't have been a better second book after Akira.
Yeah.
So weird and maybe pushes at the boundaries of what manga are.
But it was the one that introduced me to the episodic kind of formula. Mm. So it really threw me for a loop. I did not expect that as I was continuing through that volume. Yeah, it was quite the jump off from Akira. Because I'm still, like, when I picture the art, I'm just like, not very good.
Mm.
Yeah, a bit of a jump down from Akira. It was interesting second pick.
Mm. It's so weird because in listening to that episode, you really soften on it as you go.
Yeah, I find that's the case with almost all of these. Like any one of these that I like had a weird reaction to as we talk about it, I'm just like, oh, it's actually pretty good.
But now 2 weeks or I don't know, 5 months later, you're just like, yeah, no, it doesn't rate for you, eh?
I mean, it's not something I would ever revisit. It is something that I would recommend to our friend Jim Zub, and that might be it. Like if anyone that has those kind of interests, I would suggest it to, but it's definitely, out of all the books, it's pretty low on my recommendation list, I think. Hmm. Sorry, David.
No big deal. It's nothing's so for everybody.
But I love that you recommended it, Dave, because I had stopped reading it at about volume 3. I mean, I liked it, but I didn't feel compelled to pick up every single volume. And your recommendation made me continue reading it and realize, whoa, it develops.
Yeah.
It stops being a goofy thing about making food in the dungeon, and it becomes a full-on story.
And part of the fun of the podcast for me is seeing these books through like your six eyes. How many eyes do human beings have? But like getting your perspectives, getting, you know, why you like it, why you dislike it. Because for me, you know, like as a comics critic, like good and bad doesn't really matter. Like it's just like the first sentence in a conversation. Like I want to know how it made you feel. Like, did it make you cry? Did it make you laugh? Because that's like where the meat and potatoes is for me. That's where the fun of the conversation. Like I could probably have an hour-long conversation on a book that I did not enjoy much at all, as long as there was something in that book that I could like latch onto and talk about, for good or for ill. And I think we do a really good job of creating those conversations.
Mm-hmm. Read.
The other big theme in that one was first one that you read backwards. You read in the Japanese or reading orientation, whereas because your first volume of Akira was flipped. Are you still finding it difficult to go backwards and forwards for black and white comics or manga? Because we've read a couple other ones that were flipped that read the North American orientation as well.
Yeah, I mean, I'm at the point where I prefer it to be in the Japanese format.
Mm.
Just because the majority are in that format. So yeah. I find it hard to actually switch back to kind of North American reading style.
Hmm.
Yeah. It's
interesting.
I'm in it.
Yeah. Woo. We converted another one. We were talking to Stephen Robson, who's the publisher of Journal of My Father, and he used the term reading sense as like the direction that it reads in, the Japanese sense or the North American sense, which is what the French are using, which is the same word. It's sens, S-E-N-S. Mm. And that's where he gets, like, he reads a lot of manga in French. And so I've always found it really difficult to try and explain, like, reading backwards is like an inherently, like, not racist, but absolutely imperialist description of something. And it's like, oh, it's in the Japanese reading sense, or is it in the North American reading sense? And it's very clear. I don't know if it'll catch on here, but I thought that that was actually really interesting. And it was really hard. I actually read another Taniguchi book that was flipped, and it reading it right after Journal of My Father. So hard to read Taniguchi's work in the flipped order now, which is kind of crazy.
Yeah.
Because it was never created with that in mind.
Mm.
You know, I mean, it's when you create comics, you have very definite sense of how the eye will go from one panel to the next. Mm. And when you flip it, you know, it's changed, right? And sometimes it doesn't naturally work that way.
Mm-hmm. I find it interesting that Japanese comics don't flip North American comics to read in the Japanese reading order. If you're going to read a Japanese, you're going to read it in a North American comic, you're just expected to read it in the North American reading order in Japanese, and because they don't want to disrupt the art or whatever. And it's pretty uniquely a Western world kind of a thing where things have to be our way if we're going to actually engage with them at all.
Yeah, it's like when you know, when my family goes overseas on a trip and my dad says driving on the wrong side of the road. It's not the wrong side of the road.
Was it like the guy who directed Parasite was saying, you know, I think Western people should get used to seeing stories in their native form. You're missing out on a lot of great entertainment just because you can't handle reading one text at the bottom of a screen.
Mm.
So like, for example, we were just talking about Akira, right? And there's always, seems like every 2 or 3 years, there's someone who says they're going to make an American version of Akira. And I'm here to tell you, why bother?
Yeah.
I mean, have you seen the North American movie market? Like, it's literally what they do. Like, I don't even see that as being like a, you know, America first thing, because they're doing it to themselves as well. It's like they reboot their own stuff constantly. Mm-hmm. So that's just the nature of Hollywood,
I guess so.
Maybe. Yeah.
Moving along.
Also, it'll be terrible. Like, you can take solace in the fact that it's going to be terrible.
Yeah, sorry. It'll be Death Note levels of bad. Sorry, Viz. Mermaid Saga was the third book that we read, volume one. We all really liked this one, which I was actually maybe the most surprised by, because it's sort of an air quotes classic manga. But apparently, Rumiko Takahashi's work is timeless, or at least her older work is.
It seems like she's pretty good at her job.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it was really good.
Yeah, yeah, that one is still the best one for surprises.
Huh.
Mm, yeah.
You know, Frank and Fran kind of tried that. There were a few good twists, but even when reading Frank and Fran, I just kept thinking back to Mermaid Saga and that it did those a bit better.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Rumiko Takahashi, everybody. One of the things that you brought up, Chip, in that episode was that you mentioned that you had seen the Miami Vice in the Air Tonight sequence, which is just this like long wordless sequence of Crockett and Tubbs driving in a car with In the Air Tonight playing over it. And you had a great anecdote where you're like, yeah, I want to do more comics like that with like these long sequences that are just time and environment and whatever. And you were talking to some, you know, one of your buddies, everybody's like, oh, you've been reading a lot of manga lately, huh? And it was like, clearly that had an impact about how you were thinking about comics. Were there other impacts on how you were thinking about comics from this sort of this podcast, this experiment of reading a bunch of manga?
Oh my God. I'm certain. I mean, my next project is very much kind of a result of this podcast.
Oh really?
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. Yeah, I can't really talk about it because it hasn't been announced, but when it gets announced, people will be like, oh, yeah, all right.
This is the manga an American version of Akira?
Oh, damn. Don't spoil it for everyone.
Oh, I know. It's a lesbian Yakuza love story.
Yeah, yeah.
That's exciting, though.
Most of my ideas come from misinterpreting a thing I've either heard or seen, and then I realize my misinterpretation could be its own thing.
Mm,
yeah,
that's good.
I think that lesbian Yakuza story needs to be done because it sounds amazing.
But yeah, I mean, my next comic project, I mean, like, I have lofty ambitions to tell, like, these longer kind of drawn out scenes, but then I'm just like, oh, but, like, I still got to get a 20 page comic out. So it's probably going to just feel like my previous work, unfortunately.
You never know.
You never know. Yeah.
Here's hoping. We then went on to our first Jose pick with number 4, which was Helter Skelter by Kyoko Okazaki. And that was really interesting because it was a manga that I think we all ended up really liking, but it was filled with characters we just hated, especially the lead. And it was like really different than, I don't know, it was kind of an out of left field pick. And I actually felt really bad about this because I picked it not knowing that it was out of print, technically out of print. There are still copies floating around, but it's not available anymore. And it's, yeah, I really liked that one, but I still think about, like, Kyoko Okazaki's work all the time. And, like, is there a way to actually release it and have it not be, have it be more of a success in the North American market? Work like that, that's actually really difficult where there's no one to root for.
No.
Straight up no.
I don't know if that's necessarily the problem. Like,
yeah.
I'm trying to think of movies like Falling Down. Like, that guy sucks. And I think most people who watch that movie would agree that guy sucks. Like, there are movies about unpleasant people doing unpleasant things, but I think that the challenge with Paradise Kiss maybe is that maybe there's not a lot of comics content like that we're used to yet at the time that it came out.
Helter Skelter.
Oh, Helter Skelter. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Same thing for Paradise Kiss, though, frankly.
Yeah.
But I'd say, too, that, you know, that Helter Skelter, Kyo Okazaki, the problem with her work is not the fact that the characters were unpleasant. The issue is that her art takes a little getting used to.
I agree with that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, and the subject matter, too, is like, it's not a populist story. Right. No. Yeah. The art style is definitely very niche. It doesn't really conform to what, you know, the standard young manga reader who makes up a majority of the readers might want. But that's fine. Like, I don't think it needs to be like a big commercial success. Like, it's nice, you know, if they make back their print run and like maybe there's a bit of extra money there. But yeah, like, I don't think a book like that is ever going to be like the number one seller. And I think that's totally acceptable.
Yeah. I kind of feel like Kyoko Okazaki is a little bit like the Velvet Underground. Like,
yeah,
people who know the stuff read it and get influenced and inspired by it.
Yeah. Yeah,
I mean, it's one of those things where, like, if you like Velvet Underground, probably never sold as much as Led Zeppelin, but they influence a lot of people.
Yeah,
I agree with that. That's a good. That I like that recommendation because I also like the Velvet Underground, so it's perfect. Moving along, we did number 5, which was like a really out of left field pick. Was What the Font, and that, Deb, that was your pick. That was by Kenichi Ashiya. I have written down as my note here, this is the technically worst manga that we all really liked, because it has so many problems as like a manga, like the drawing and the lettering and the storytelling is like whatever. But we all really loved this, and that was so surprising listening to this episode and just seeing like, yeah, it was great. And you even recommended it to people. Like, you had to put some pretty hard caveats on that.
Yeah,
you were still like, yeah, go check this out, and that's so surprising to me.
I mean, it's a great way to learn about fonts. Like, really? I mean, like, it does the job that it sets out to do. And it's, you know, there's some fun bits in it. Sometimes that's all the book needs to be.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't know a lot of this stuff.
No, same here.
Yeah. I felt like an idiot reading that book.
I'm sorry. Hard,
mission accomplished.
Yeah.
Next up, we had Wave Listen to Me, and this is the one that I didn't super gel with. And I got to be honest, I actually didn't. I said I was going to go read volume 2 and see if I could get into it a little bit more, and I didn't. And it's so weird because I really want to. Like, I want to like it, but it's just, I don't know, I think it's like Chip was saying, it's not a priority to like go read the next volume of something that you didn't love the first volume of. And I think that that's an interesting part about this whole experiment, is that there is stuff that's been recommended that I hadn't read before where I kept reading past the end of what we were supposed to read for the podcast and really enjoyed it and have picked up other volumes and stuff. Yeah. I wonder,
I don't know if I ever did that. Come to think about it. I mean, a lot of the stuff I already owned or had read before, but outside of Even Though We're Adults, where I checked to see if like the next volume was out and was glad that it wasn't because I was feeling sad. Mostly I just read like the assignment for the week and left it at that.
Mm. Yeah.
I will say that a lot of people, because of the show, I think discovered Wave, listened to me for the first time. So I thought that was really positive.
Yeah, definitely.
I think you should give it another shot, Chris.
Have you, did you read volume two?
No, but I really enjoyed volume one. I feel like sometimes you're not in the right frame of mind when you hit a certain book. And I feel like that one, you may not have been in the right frame of mind for that book at that time. Cause I think it's got a lot of things in there that you generally would enjoy.
I specifically like, yeah. And I just did not, I was reading it going, okay. And it's what it, there's a thing, I came to a realization a little bit late on this one, and I can't remember which one of you guys was talking about it, but it was like, you were, what episode was it? It was, you were reading one of the manga for the podcast, and you were like, waiting, oh, it was when I just listened to Delicious in Dungeon. You're like, you, Chip, you were like Marceline's reactions to eating the monsters and everything that's going on were so crazy and over the top, and she was always like so freaked out about everything. That you were convinced that she was somehow also a monster. On episode two, you just kept waiting and waiting and waiting for the shoe to drop. You know what I mean? Like for the big reveal, and it never came. And it turns out she's just a really loud character that's like very uptight or whatever.
But then again, that's another example of Chip making a spinoff idea that actually would have been way more interesting.
There you go.
Storyteller, man.
I think that's what it was for me with Wave Listen to Me, is that I read Blade of the Immortal, and every character in that series is just a total bastard. Like, is just like secretly an assassin, is going to murder you in your sleep. Mm-hmm. So I'm reading Wave Listen to Me, which is like this totally normal, everyday Hokkaido thing. And I loved big aspects of it like that, but it's just like, which one of these characters that looks like an utter scumbag that would definitely be a murderer in Blade of the Immortal is going to murder her. And it never comes. Like, it never happens. Even the downstairs neighbor, who's actually been really nice to her and been like putting her in her own bed when she gets home drunk and crawls into his house being like a psycho. Like, no one murdered anybody in that book. And I was, Samura's work has me on edge, I think is what it is. Like, I'm just waiting for that shoe to drop. Someone's going to stab somebody or like pull out a like very thin piece of garret wire and just like strangle somebody else or something, because that's
keep an eye on the turtle. That's all I'm saying.
No comment, but keep reading.
maybe I'll go back and I'll be like, all right, no one's gonna get murdered, or maybe wait, maybe listen, episode two or volume two will settle a little bit differently. Speaking of series with volume twos that land a little bit differently, episode number seven was Yotsuba, where like there are comments on the show notes and stuff, and on Twitter was just like, the difference in quality between volume one and volume two is astronomical. And it was just like, oh, and yeah, I absolutely think that was the case, where I kind of didn't love, I mean, volume one is volume one and you're kind of waiting for the other shoe to drop, but it's, the series just grows so much from volume to volume.
That was the book that taught me that I can't just recommend a volume one sometimes.
Would you like to expand on that?
Well, just that, I mean, I read volume one, two, and I thought, yeah, you know, it's not as delightful as the more recent volumes that I've read. And that the moments that I really loved were in the later volumes. Like, I kept talking about the pancake one, right? I mean, the pancake episode was the one that just made me laugh out loud. I think that made me really think about when I recommend manga, to think about what that first impression will be. And if that first impression is only that first book, is that a good first impression? Is that an accurate good first impression? Because everyone, like, you know, just like kind of like Yotsuba in the book, right? Nobody hates Yotsuba. I mean, there's Yanda, and Yanda's just kind of a jackass, but he doesn't hate Yotsuba. He loves to make fun of her.
Yeah.
But nobody hates her. But the same thing. So it's like, it was hard to imagine a situation where I could put Yotsuba in front of somebody and they go, it's okay. What? How could you? And then I had to read volume one. Like, if I only read volume one, I'd probably be lukewarm on this too.
Well, that was Twitter's reaction. What do you mean Yotsuba isn't your favorite? Oh, sorry. <yo. laughs> I think that's interesting. And that kind of becomes a theme too, like with the whole season, where it's just like things grow as series, but grow in our imaginations. You know what I mean? Like you're kind of tempted to think something's always been good. And I'm actually going to skip to, because I think maybe this is a better thematic link. The episode that we recorded right after Yotsuba was 7 Billion Needles. And that was David's pick. We actually went back and dropped an episode in, and we'll talk about that in a second. But 7 Billion Needles was a book, David, I got the sense that like meant a lot to you and really resonated with you at the time, and maybe didn't hit the same way when you reread it as, you know, 10 years later.
Yeah. I don't think anything hits the same way when you reread it. Some books, you know, I'm always rereading Akira, and it's always a different experience because I'm different. Mm-hmm. And I think that the me I was when I read 7 Billion Needles is, you know, like, what is it, 8 years younger than the me that I am now or something like that?
Yeah.
So there's been a lot of stories read in that time, and also a lot of thought given to like the issues raised in that story, a lot of stories read that are similar to that. So now I have like a slightly different perspective on the same story. Like it's still good, and I still like stand by everything that I said about it. But looking back at it, I think for me today it's a different book.
Yeah.
Not from soup to nuts, but just a different perspective on the book, different angle.
The David of 8 years ago was like, alien consciousness, take me away.
Yeah, I was blown away.
Yeah.
Giant naked guys with no junk. Goodness. Amazing.
Still upset about that. We got permission from David to bump 7 Billion Needles a week to drop.
Permission from me?
Permission from you to drop in another episode before it. And that was Way of the House Husband. That was the book that Chip wanted to pick and do. And we bumped it so that we could actually release it the same week as the anime. And that actually, Way of the House Husband episode is our best episode, not counting the first episode. It is our most listened to episode because we released our take on it at the like height of the discussion of Way of the House Husband. And that's
also because it was my pick.
All because of Chip.
The Chip effect.
Yeah, I taught you all a thing about picking manga.
We actually got a comment that was like, hey, the Way of the House Husband episode was really good. Do you think Chip could pick them more often? And I was just like, oh,
we should do that.
Yes.
You were supposed to pick another manga later on. I can't remember what book it was.
Oh, yeah.
But you were really interested and you were just totally forgot when it came time to pick the manga because these sessions tend to go on for 2.5 hours.
Yeah.
You think we're long-winded. We're cutting it down. David's doing the Lord's work. You're cutting it down to 1.5 hours. So yeah, Way of the House Husband, I don't think, did you end up watching the anime? Did you end up like liking it or not liking it? Or what was it?
I didn't watch the anime mostly because I kind of saw people talking about it and be like, it's not very good. And since I don't much care for anime to start with, and I think the drawings and the pacing in the book itself are just so spectacular, I'm like, I'm not even going to bother.
They really try to preserve the pacing of the book in the anime, and it's a different medium. Like there's no other way to say it. They're just two different media, and you got to kind of work with the strengths of each. So
to this day, it's still the only book where I went and I bought the follow-up volumes.
Wow. There you go. Well, we're going to get to that at the end, but yeah, it's good to know that you, Way of the House Husband, still ranked so highly. Next episode with my pick, it was Tech on Kinkreet by Taiyo Matsumoto. Oh, yeah. My note here is, we decided it was a manga for people who make comics, who like making comics or like creating stuff. I kind of would still stand behind that. What do you guys think?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, same.
Yeah, because I remember in the reading of it, like, just how much like kind of interest was put into drawing all the environments and vehicles and things. And there's definitely a clear case of somebody just who enjoys the act of drawing.
Mm. Yeah. It's still top three for me. I love that one. And I'm glad you all liked it, you know, to different degrees, but I'm glad you all liked it.
Yeah.
Speaking of a book that not everyone liked, episode 11, this is the one where we got the most like kind of bemused feedback was Full Metal Alchemist Volume 1 by Hiromu Arakawa. And yeah, Volume 1 might actually be bad comics. And it's shocking. People are nice about it, don't get me wrong, but the number of comments that we got that were like, I was just listening to that and like gritting my teeth, but I couldn't disagree with anything you were saying.
that's my favorite kind of comment.
Yeah.
I love it.
David, so you've mentioned you just got to the end of Brotherhood for the second time, which is the second anime adaptation. Mm-hmm. Is the comic as good as people think, or does it come alive in animation, which is, I think, what Chip was saying was maybe his take on this?
Both. The comic is as good as people think, but the animation, they do the thing where there's like, this is the good part, and like the really high quality animation comes out, you know, for certain scenes.
Yeah.
But I think the overall story, kind of the way it builds the, like, it's a shonen manga that's kind of mostly about ethnic cleansing in a way that isn't horrible.
Yeah.
Like, it deals with like the effects, like a lot of the cast are like, oh yeah, like I kind of did some really messed up stuff a few years ago and now I have to pay the price.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll stand by it, I think.
Mm. The other thing is Arakawa sensei is actually awesome. Draw really incredible things, a couple of really incredible sequences. And it's the kinds of things that like stick in fans' minds when they, when you say, oh, Full Metal Alchemist. And they're like, oh, that awesome scene where this happened. And you're like, that's volume 16. Mm-hmm. Like that was way down the road, but it's just like one idea. This series is like one idea in your head, you know? Yeah. The number of people that were like, actually, there was a comment I was just reading. It was like, yeah, I remember not liking volume one and only reading it because my friends pressured me into it because they were all really into it. And I picked it up and I didn't like it. And they actually compared it to Sandman by Gaiman, Trinberg, and Sam Keith. And Sandman, I think a lot of people don't know this. Back when Sandman was being released the first time through DC Vertigo, trade paperbacks weren't a thing. Like, they weren't a guarantee. Like, very few things actually got trade paperback collections at that time, you know, 30 years ago now, 86, 87. Mm-hmm. And the first collection of Sandman was actually volume two, because those early stories, those first eight issues, are all over the place. There's like nine artists on like the various issues. They don't necessarily cohere into a thing. And the second arc, which is actually an arc with a beginning, middle, and end, is what they released first with no number on it. And a lot of people, I don't think that if Sandman had been released in chronological order and you've got this like first volume of Sandman, that it necessarily would have done very well. Like, Invisibles was like that. Volume one was released and it sold so poorly that they didn't release anymore until they literally rebooted the series with a new number one. And that became volume, the next volume they released was volume four, like 6 years later, 7 years later. And then that sold okay. So wow. They kept going. A lot of that, as much as I like that series, I got to credit Philia Menez for the art on that, for really tightening up that series. But like, it's a series that I love. But yeah, this isn't a problem, I guess I want to say, that's exclusive to manga, where like the first volumes creator finding their feet happens all the time, even with established creators in the West. And I think that we're just a little bit more divorced from like the origins of of book collections and things like that now, whereas in manga, I think we're still finding ground in manga. Mm-hmm. It's interesting too that the two most recent editions of Fullmetal Alchemist aren't the first volume. It's the hardcover, which has the first one and a half volumes, which has the like killer story about the doctor, you know, turning his own daughter into a weird dog person. And the other edition is the first three volumes in one. And those give you a much bigger sense of the world and sort of what the stakes are for the series. So I think it's really interesting how stuff's collected. And I think it goes back to Deb, what you were saying about what are we actually reading on the book. Speaking of which, what are we actually reading? The next book was Oishinbo. And that was one where there's kind of seven interchangeable volumes. I think everyone started with what was technically volume one. I went back and read the comments and stuff for that one. And I still don't know that I got a sense. What do you actually think of Oishinbo this far away from having read it for the manga podcast? You all were kind of like really mixed on it at the time, but you weren't like, I'm never going to read it again either.
Still haven't gotten around to the Rice volume. So, but I
will. Yeah, but you weren't like,
my recollection is I liked it.
That you would read another volume if there was something specific you wanted to know about, but you weren't going to read it for fun, is maybe my recollection of it.
Yeah, but I mean, I wouldn't read most of these again for fun, really.
Do you read comics for fun at all, though? Like, do you even lift, bro?
This is true. Oh, my God.
Has being in the profession ruined reading comics for fun for you?
Partly, yeah. Yeah. I mean, there have been instances, like, especially doing this podcast, where I've, like, I have really enjoyed reading a lot of these. But none of them really hit the point where I'm, like, I go out of my way to reread or pick up the next volumes of it. Because the reading list by my bed is just too high of stuff I have to read for work. So that's all I mean by that. But Oishinbo, like I genuinely enjoyed it. There's some really great moments in it, and it really created such a great sense of food. you know? I mean, what it set out to do. Like, I craved going out to restaurants again.
I hit my first Japanese restaurant this past weekend, and it was everything I wanted and more. It was so, it's been a long year and a half.
That's lovely. Yeah.
I was going to say, like, you know, because the Oishinbo volumes were just like themed around the food, but not necessarily in a straight narrative arc.
Yeah.
If you want that narrative arc experience, like how the story, other than the food, progressed in the manga, Oishinbo has anime has an official channel on YouTube where you can watch from episode one up to, I don't know, episode how many, but you basically get the reading, the story experience in order.
There you go. You've now got something to zone out to in front of the television.
I'd be more interested if they did like a volume where they kind of cherry picked, not based on, you know, the type of food or whatever, but based on story.
Ah.
Mm-hmm.
Like they're just like, oh, this thing happens in this chapter that people need to understand for the story. And this thing, like, I think that would be it. If I were in charge of publishing, that's what I would do. I would put out an Oishinbo collection that was just about the story itself and not about, you know, oh, this is these are all stories about ramen.
At a certain level, there's no real story to Oishinbo. I think it's like, it just resets at the end of, it's like The Simpsons, except it's about a really mean father-son duo that like Japanese food but hate everything else, including clipping their nails at the office.
I haven't watched all the Oishinbo anime, so I don't know whether their relationship evolves in any way, but...
And also, I haven't watched The Simpsons for 15 years, so maybe those relationships have evolved.
No. All right, that might be the halfway point for this season, Oishinbo Volumes. And I think that's a good time to take a little break. We'll insert the break here. We'll be right back after these messages from our sponsor.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then get one-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean Angus ground beef chuck for $3.99 each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And we're back. Hopefully that was a good break with a good commercial, if there are such things. We left off with the halfway point, and we are starting what was the second half of season one. Episode 13 was Beastars. And this was such a weird pick. I feel like you almost didn't finish reading the first. Like, you were going to maybe just be like, what is this? I'm not going to read this anymore. This isn't comics. And you ended up in a very different place on that one.
Yeah. Yeah. The art, I'm still in my mind, I can picture certain scenes that I'm bouncing off of right
still,
now.
Still, huh?
Yeah, yeah. I still have not picked up volume 3, which involved eggs.
You gotta
read
that chapter.
The thing I need
just
to get
gotta
to.
Read that chapter, the egg salad sandwich chapter.
All right. In my retirement, I will. I will say that about this whole endeavor. In my retirement, I will continue a lot of these, but not until then.
My pick for the next episode of Mangasplaining is Beastars Volume 3, Chapter 6, the Egg Salad Sandwich Chapter. And we're just going to talk about that for an hour. It's going to be great.
Perfect.
Moving along then to Episode 14, which was Paradise Kiss. David, I feel like you already had the hot take on this one. Characters we hated in manga that we kind of enjoyed.
It's a really good lane to be in. Like, Superman is cool, but he's always going to make the right decision. So give me Daredevil, who is... heavily concussed and possibly a lunatic.
Yeah, you're talking my language.
And that's sort of how I feel about books like this. Like, show me the grimy, you know, shenanigans.
This is a book of grimy shenanigans, I will say. It was great how many people came out of the woodwork to be like, yeah, I read it in Metal Down as a teen, but I reread it now and I'm just cringing so hard, but I'm still glad I read it. So that's a good one. Next up was our first of maybe our first official shonen book, which was David picking Naruto Volume 1. And that's something I think we've come back to quite a few times to talk about over the course of like the rest of the episodes.
I feel like that's important for us to talk about, to expose Chip to books like this, because it is such a foundational example of a type of manga and a type of storytelling that you can, just like how people always talk about Lone Wolf and Cub, right? Like you can go back to it and say, oh yeah, like in Naruto, blah, 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 blah. And it provides a jumping off point for talking about other manga.
Yeah, like a shared language.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is really well done.
Yeah, I think it's a solid one. But do you feel like you've gotten enough of that foundation? Would you like to see more like foundational classic works, or do you want more like contemporary, or you're just happy to take it as it comes?
I mean, only if they're good. That's the thing. Naruto is like foundational. Mm. It clearly hits all the archetype, the tropes of that genre, but it does it really well. Like, as long as it does it well, unless it becomes repetitive, then I'll bounce off it, I'm sure.
Mm. It does. Moving along, Panorama Island. Suihiro Maruo and Edogawa Rampo, published by Last Gasp. This was Deb's pick, and I just remember, I mean, not to give away all the secrets, Deb and I talked for weeks about how worried she was about having picked this and how like she was thought that Chip was going to hate it, and how he had to buy a hardcover book to actually read it. And yeah, it was amazing how we all really liked
it. I was so angsty about it.
Well, everyone think I'm a weird pervert.
but that kind of speaks to some of the, like, whenever we all talk about how we pick manga, right? And one of the reasons why I picked that was I feel like we have this platform to promote books. And sometimes it's good to promote books that are good or interesting, but not necessarily what everyone has seen or read in their every bookstore.
Mm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Last Gasp publishes very few manga, but the way they do publish is quite good. And like everyone loves Junji Ito. He's practically his own category of manga nowadays.
Yeah.
So I thought, you know, if you guys like horror manga, let's bring you into another option. So anyway, that's kind of some of how I think about when I recommend manga. Mm. Yeah. But of course, I'm angsty about it because I read it and I thought, no, I've read better books by him. Anyway.
I really took a chance on the next book, which was Even Though We're Adults. I liked the creator, but I hadn't read this book. This is the first book, I think, that we recommended that we hadn't actually read or even at any point. It was brand new. It was relatively new as well. And I'm remarkably surprised at how well it turned out. Like, it was a big roll of the dice. We could have been reading just something that was, well, not good, let's say, but everyone kind of dug that one, including myself. And I'm so happy to hear that everyone kind of dug it. I wish there was a book that was like that featured, you know, gay dudes that I could recommend, but anything I've read that's sort of in that space isn't quite the same. And it's like, I'm happy to have recommended the book. I think it's a great book, but it's like, I kind of want the gay dude version of that book to exist. And even things that I do like What Did You Eat Yesterday, which is about gay dudes, isn't exactly the same thing, unfortunately, which is, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah. One day you'll have your Even Though We're Also Adults manga.
Yeah. I feel like there's still work to do there, but yeah. Anyway, next up we had the divisive, is the anime better or is the manga better? Monthly Girls Nozaki-kun. And I feel like you listen to that episode and it's really clear. And then Chip surprised us like just a couple episodes ago by saying he kept watching the Nozaki-kun anime and really liked parts of it that were coming up later.
Yeah, I still don't think it comes near the heights of the manga.
Really?
I think the pacing and the speed of the jokes and the drawings like really, really aid the humor more so in the manga. Also, maybe it's just like, I can't tell if it's because like I'm generally a humorous person. It might not come through on this podcast. That maybe I'm filling in the gaps in the voice and like that's such a part of comics, is what you bring to it.
Yeah.
And sometimes I think with some of the humor stuff, I'm like, I'm filling in these kind of weird gaps that when I see it in anime, I'm like, oh, no, that's not how that should be delivered. Mm. That's not the motion that should follow that still shot.
Mm.
Like, I feel like I have more critiques over anime as a result because I'm filling in the gaps in the manga.
That's fascinating, actually. And I think it maybe ties into, maybe we'll get into this later on another episode, but it ties into the idea of why we bounce off of anime or manga, like bounce off of things. And maybe there isn't, because the author isn't leaving space for us to invest ourselves into. That's another big one. Big topic for later.
Sorry.
Speaking of big topics for later, our first very long, very, very long episode was actually episode 19. It was our first time covering two separate manga. It was Yona of the Dawn and then the sponsored edition of Yakuza Lover. Yakuza Lover.
It's a hit. I'm telling you, we got to take this to SoundScan.
There you go. Yeah, Deb, you did not enjoy Yona of the Dawn. And I think that might be the biggest surprise for me from this whole podcast is like that you got to the end of that and you were just like, meh, like did not enjoy it. Because I actually really liked it. The more I think about Yona of the Dawn, the more I actually like it. And that's weird.
Wow. Because
it's not
that
good, but I have nothing to rosy memory. Like, I know
things
are out of order. Like, that first volume is technically a mess. There are flashbacks within flashbacks. Like, it's a disaster. But, like, by volume three, I'm like, man, she pulled it off. This is a solid action adventure, like, shoujo fantasy manga. Who wouldn't want this? And, you know, it was so surprising that I read that and felt so good about it. And I get to the episode and you're just like, I have seen this before and I do not care for it anymore. And I was just like, wow. Very clear from
Deb. I was going to mention that. I think that, for example, if you compare Deb and I think Deb has read a lot more shoujo stories in general and probably also shoujo stories of this type than I have. Mm. But this is like brand new to me.
Mm. Ah,
so okay. I think it's fresh for me in a way that it might not be fresh for Deb. Not to put words in your mouth.
I mean, I was trying to figure that out too, because it perplexed me as well. Because I'm probably the person who most felt like we didn't do enough shoujo manga in the first season, and I felt like that was a problem, and that to be presented with a shoujo manga that I just didn't do anything for me.
Yeah.
It was kind of shocking to me.
Yeah.
I'm going to take the chip roll here and say, I haven't read to volume three.
Mm.
And maybe I need to force myself to do that to see what the hype
slacker.
Is.
Slacker.
But, you know, as it stands now, it's like, I like Skip Beat better.
Yeah, sometimes it's like that. You know, sometimes I'll pick up a seinen book and I'm like, this is just some loser with like gratuitous nudity.
Yeah.
And normally those are great things, but sometimes you hit a book and you're just like, this is the boring version of what I like.
Yeah.
I've purged all those comics from my collection, but I feel you. Not digitally yet.
Why didn't you just give them to me, Chris? Come on.
And then Yakuza Lover. I don't know if we're officially counting that as a book that we've read, but I kind of have been, and it's just like that had nothing to do with anything that we were reading this year. It was so out of left field. Like that whole, like sitting down to read that. And I was just like, what the hell? It was all splash pages. It was all like fluids. It was just so much, so much going on in that book that had nothing. Like it didn't even feel like, at times it didn't even feel like the rest of the manga that we were reading. You know what I mean? Like it still feels like a manga. It still has a lot of those hallmarks and things like that. Yeah, and I was reading it.
It did the job.
Yeah. I mean, I will say that we because we're trying to introduce Chip to good manga, we have not introduced him to a lot of trashy manga. And there's a lot of trashy, guilty pleasure manga out there.
I'm on board. We still got to do Dick Fight Island. So yeah, let's. That is my one regret, is that I didn't manage to recommend Dick Fight Island because there were so many other things that were like on the list. Yeah. Like I said, you guys ever want to go twice a week on this podcast, you let me know and I'll have just like twice as many picks that we can read.
Dick Fight Island has volume two coming out, so maybe.
Yeah, there you go.
That could be good.
Next up was episode 20, the long awaited book that is really high quality following Akira, and that was A Bride Story. Yeah, that was interesting how short that episode was, because it was just like, we all loved this. We just loved it. And it's not that there wasn't things to say, but yeah, there was no conflict. It was just like, oh, yeah. So good.
Some things are just good.
Yeah.
I think the one revelation for A Bride Story for me was that you had not read it before, Chris.
Yeah, I don't know. I was maybe just so burnt out on CMX's stuff. I don't really dig on the Victorian stuff, so I'd never read Emma. And then by the time that people were like, A Bride Story, and it was just not where my head's at. It was like historical fiction set in like the 1700s or whatever. Like, it was just like, no, it's not where I'm at. Yeah. And now, like, yeah, I can't. I'm definitely going to keep reading that series. I'm not going to get caught up, unfortunately, because there's too much to read and too much to do. But I would never, like, if volume two shows up at my house, Vandrew, if you end up listening to this episode, if you bring volume two home for me, I'll be a very happy boy. So thank you. Next up, speaking of comedy, Saint Young Men, a David pick where Chip kept falling asleep while reading it.
Nobody's perfect.
I didn't actually fall asleep.
I'm sorry. That's on the record, sir.
I believe it just took me a lot of different tries.
Fair enough.
if you read the hardcover, and it would fall on your head and it would be really painful.
That would be your way.
Yeah.
Oh, the references thing in that episode really surprised me, because we've had like minor differences in our books before as we read, but never one that had such a drastic effect on the reading experience. With the references being between the chapters for you three and at the end of the book for me.
Yeah.
It changed everything, and it's so weird. It's really weird. And we noticed that a little bit with Akira in episode one, where it's like all of our editions didn't quite line up, but I don't think it changed the reading experience to the extent that St. Young Men did. I will say, Chip, of all the books that we've read that you've been like, volume one was okay, or I didn't really like it and I'm not going to keep reading, that's the one where I think if you read a second volume and got into the rhythm of it, and honestly, the mangaka gets a little bit better with volume two, you specifically in your love of comedy, I think you would really, really enjoy it. And maybe that'll be something we do.
Add it to my retirement pile.
I will say that, you know, like, I wanted this manga to be in English for so long, so passionately, that when it finally did come out, I immediately bought the digital edition, and I wanted to read it so badly. But, you know, after listening to the episode, I felt like, you know what? If I really love this book, I got to put my money where my mouth is. So I went to Write Stuff, and I bought all five of the omnibuses.
Oh, wow.
Just say, you know what? I'm going to support this shit. Also, it was on sale.
Well, there you go.
Nice. Everyone wins.
Yeah.
Journal My Father.
I'm so embarrassed by that episode. I'm sorry.
What? No.
No, it was so authentic and honest, Deb. You're the best.
Yeah.
It was... I look back and I regret not sharing a little bit more, but I'm still dealing with some of the things that maybe you guys have already dealt with there. So, but I will say I was listening to that episode and I was just like blown away by how much you guys were willing to share and how the book affected you and touched you. Honestly, that episode just went up yesterday, and we're getting emails, Instagram DMs, everyone on Twitter is being so nice and like loving the episode. It's unbelievable that, I don't know, this day and age, I feel like you share an authentic part of yourself and you don't immediately get shit on. That's pretty good.
I'm grateful.
Maybe I am cynical.
I'm also glad that my mom doesn't listen to this.
I had that in my head too when I was talking about my dad during that episode. I'm like, oh, thank God dad has no idea what I do for a living.
Mom doesn't have Twitter or Facebook either, so thank you, Generation Gap.
Yeah.
Does your dad know about your impression of him, Chip? That's really good.
Oh, no. I don't even know that I do an impression. Oh, God.
You do a little. You got a little bit of the Northern Ontario accent that he's got when you say things that he's saying. And it's actually like very subtle, but yeah, it's pretty good.
Wow.
Oh, wow. Now I'm self-conscious.
Oh, no. Don't be. I love it. Please keep sharing. It was so good.
That was amazing. Thank you. I really
now I'm
going to
put on like a weird accent next time I try and
tell no, I really about appreciate my dad, your stories.
I'm going to have that in my head.
Chip, I thought that was really wonderful.
Yeah.
Those were great.
It added to it, I think. Like, it wasn't like a like vaudeville accent. It was just like, oh, this is like how his dad sounds to him, you know?
Yeah. Well, now you'll never hear it again because it'll be in my head that I do this thing. I'll probably be like, and then my dad said, well, hey there, Chip.
Even better.
You're just lucky I got too choked up to imitate my dad, because my dad is a full-on pigeon.
It was amazing listening to you each talk about your experiences that the book reminded you of in a very different way. You each come to those experiences and talk about them and remember them and share them very differently. And I think that was awesome, actually. So I don't know. Everyone's saying that that was the best episode. They haven't heard the Frank and Fran episode yet, so you know, still
it's a barn burner.
Next episode was BL Metamorphosis, and this was Deb's pick. Yeah, I didn't share this because I felt like we had done the sad stuff on the previous episode. But the first time I was reading BL Metamorphosis before this in the Japanese with my Google Translate on my phone and stuff, I actually cried at the end. The Goro scene. It was the first place that I ever went in Japan. I was like really emotional and welled up anyway. And it's been a shitty year. I mean, whatever, everyone knows, but where she's like she misses out on the opportunity to share that space, that going to Sunshine 60 and with her husband, cause she doesn't want to go cause the line's too long. I've done that, I don't know, a dozen times, maybe dozens of times in Japan, and Ikebukuro and Sunshine 60 are the first places that I went to in Japan. The first time I went, and I went with Andrew. And the idea, it really hit for me, like if I had lost that opportunity because I had been too tired or I didn't want to wait in line to go up the elevator, I'd been too lazy or whatever. That was the first time in a long time that a manga connected with me and was like, this is what you would have lost. This is what she's feeling right now. This is what she lost. And it killed me. And that's why I didn't actually recommend BL Metamorphosis, even though I don't know if you go back and listen to the episode.
Where I didn't know that.
Oh, you recommended it. It's so good. That way I didn't have to be responsible for it. You know what I mean? I didn't actually have to host or share or have any feelings, but it was so good. And I don't mind sharing now because we actually did an episode of the podcast where we shared feelings and people weren't mean. So I'll share that now. But yeah, that was a really important experience for me, was reading that book and seeing all those places that were reflected in my life and those feelings and those moments. So thank you for that. Like, honestly, it was really nice for me to get to read that as part of the podcast. So anyway,
my motives for sharing BL Metamorphosis was a little bit different.
Oh yeah, I know.
Because I wanted to introduce Chip to the concept of boys love manga and also the concept of that there can be older people in manga, not just teenagers.
Yeah.
And this was a very sweet book. I'm a little bit dreading the last volume because I think we all know what's going to happen at the end at some point.
No comment.
September. Yeah. September. It's coming too soon.
Anyway, it's a lovely book. But yes, I agree with your point, Chris, that it wasn't everyone's top five manga. It was good, but not everyone's out of all the great books you read this year.
For me, it
might be my top five.
We'll talk about it for sure. We'll talk about it for sure.
Okay.
We got two left that we did this year. Well, actually, two and a half, let's say. Episode 24 was Frank and Fran, and I've been cracking jokes, but I keep thinking about that book. It's so bizarre. And I can't stop thinking about it. But I don't know.
I win.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
You do.
Worm this way into your head and heart, Chris.
And it's so popular, like doing the show notes for that episode, it has like a real fandom, like that book that is like went out of print and wasn't reprinted by Seven Seas, like cosplayers.
It's like a sleeper hit.
And like everyone, like it was such a, like it had a moment that missed me, like right over my head. So having read it now, I can kind of see it. But it was shocking. Anyway, just Google Frank and Fran and prepare to be amazed.
I think she's a great character. Like out of all the books we read, like she's a real standout, I think, as a character, as a very kind of unique take on like the mad scientist. Yeah.
Agreed. That episode was also Zom 100 volumes 1 and 2. And that actually, I just saw a French comics editor I follow. I guess they just released Zom 100 in French and he was just posting about it. And he's like, a really good zombie manga. Wait, don't go. Don't stop. Like, don't stop reading this post. Like, trust me, you got to read this one. This one's good. I was actually surprised at how much I liked it, considering how burnt out I kind of am. And everyone I feel like is on zombie stuff.
Yeah.
I was also really pleased to hear that the Alice in Borderland, his other work, got licensed this week.
Yeah, so. I just saw that. They're finally going to do Alice in Borderland. It only took a Netflix live action show that is really good. So that's
yeah, that show is great.
But yeah, Zom 100, surprisingly, like that's the other one that I'm like, I actually really want to see what volume 3 is all about. And if it turns in, like the first two volumes are light and fun, but I kind of want to see if volume 3 turns into anything. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Because they're going back to his hometown.
Yeah. I just met someone from Gunma, actually. It's going to be great. Finally, We have no distance. We recorded it an hour and 17 minutes ago. Akira, volume 2.
You know, it hasn't aged well since we did the podcast. Like, I saw bits of volume 3, and I don't know, man.
Yeah. David, you should just insert all of the podcast right here.
Hello and welcome to Mangasplaining. I do think it's weird that we ended up choosing Akira for the framework of this podcast, and then we ended up reading almost exclusively seinen manga. Not exclusively, but like more than half of the books we read this year were seinen manga, particularly when you throw in, you know, some of the other stuff that we talk about. And it's just like, would this series, would this whole podcast have been different if our first manga was something else, and then that set the tone and then the direction and the kinds of things we talked about? Like, you, Chip, you keep comparing books that we read to Akira and saying it, you know, falls flat or falls short or is a step down. Or...
I don't think I do that often.
Sure.
I think you bring that up more than I do in a way of like pointing to me. You'd be like, "Oh, I know it's not as well drawn as Akira, Chip," which is not what I ever mean by it. But yeah, I mean, it clearly is like the gold standard for art. Mm. So yeah, everything in its own way is a step down from Akira.
I think our choices would have been different if we'd started with a different book, but I think the podcast would have largely been the same.
I mean, yeah.
You know, in terms of mood, in terms of vibe, the types of stories we were getting into.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I think Akira provided a nice baseline of like, here's where things can go. Mm-hmm. Instead of like starting with like a very middling book where we're like, all right, Chip, what did you think of this very average work?
Or if we threw you something really challenging, right? And then you were like,
yeah,
like you don't. And then you go like, what is this? Mm. But I also want to, I mean, as far as
I feel like goes, sometimes you guys view me as like a cat, like a neighborhood cat. They're like, oh, are we approaching him too quickly? Oh, we put down little kibbles? Oh.
Not me. I'm just trying to trip you up.
Yeah.
I do want to say, like, for example, we are all grown-ups, right? And so we've all been reading comics for many years, and we have grown-up tastes. Mm-hmm. So, and that's what seinen manga is. Mm. And I think some of the best work for people like us who have been reading comics for a while is seinen manga.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, I'm a grown up with grown up taste. So give me some more Yakuza Lover.
Yeah.
Or some saucy shoujo. Yeah.
Saucy shoujo.
Yeah. And I think starting off, I think a lot of people were really surprised that we didn't start off with Tezuka, but no one was upset that we started off with Akira, because Tezuka has just come to sort of define this like huge space in manga. But really, it could have been One Piece. This could have been a more shonen, like commercial comics focused thing, and dug into shonen every episode. It could have been just classics. Like, it could have gone Tezuka and then into Rose of Versailles by Roko Keda and Udon, or and then into like the Fantagraphics Moto Hagio stuff, and then whatever. Like, it could have gone in so many different directions, and it's interesting now to look back with this episode to see that, like, yeah, Akira bookending each sort of season did affect the books that we chose, I think, in a way. And that's, you know, we're still us. I don't think I've responded to any of the books in a less than honest way, which I probably should have at a couple times. Like, I really shat on light novels a couple times, and I probably should have just kept my mouth shut, but
that's okay.
You know, it is what it is. On that note, I know, that's my closing thought. Deb, David, you both had, I think we had talked about a few closing thoughts on the series. Did you want to dig in any of those?
Yeah, I'll go first. First, it's weird that's your closing thought.
The podcast could have been real different is my closing
thought. Okay, yeah, that's fair. For me, a big part of the joy of the podcast is talking comics with all three of you, but also taking all the things I know about comics and finding ones to recommend to Chip has been a fun challenge. Mm. Because it's less like trying to lure a feral cat and more like trying to figure out his taste. Mm. And like, not just his taste, but what he might like, what he might not like, but also what might surprise him.
Mm. Yeah.
So I've been kind of counterpicking my choices based on what Deb and Chris have been doing and trying to go either like really specific or kind of left field with some of them. And like, you rise to the challenge every time. You're super curious, and that's like one of the most admirable things about you, next to your incredibly handsome beard and personal style.
Oh my goodness.
So my final thought, this has been a really fun season. Looking forward to season 2.
Deb, Final thoughts.
Oh, I guess I would say, like, I've been a guest on podcasts before, and I've never been on a podcast before. So this has been kind of really a nice exercise in being able to talk about manga in a way that where I'm not the special guest expert, but I'm one of four people who, like, we all like and know each other, and we can kind of talk about stuff in a really fun and sometimes very real way. I love that what we're doing is we are introducing manga to people who haven't read much manga before, which I think is our goal. I think a lot of anime manga podcasts sometimes are generally geared towards the already converted people who already know and love manga. But you know, I firmly believe there are people who are interested in manga but find it intimidating to get into. So I hope that what we're doing is we're reaching both types of audiences, people who are like manga but are curious to hear about what else is out there, and as well as people who are like, previously were scared of manga, but it's like, damn it, it's the best-selling genre out there. What, you know, I gotta figure out this stuff, whether it's because they're librarians or they're comic book shops, or they have, you know, their kids are reading manga, they want to understand it. And if what we're doing makes it a little bit more approachable, a little bit more intriguing, a little less intimidating, I think that's awesome.
I think so. So far, so good. 25 more episodes and we'll see where we're at. We'll see if they get that manga-splaining bump after all that we keep hinting at.
Yeah. We just got to do like Oprah, man. Like, bam, as soon as it's on a manga-splaining, it's going to sell another couple thousand copies.
That's the dream.
The dream.
Chipper, any final thoughts on season one of manga-splaining?
I don't mean to make this sound so as big as it is, but like, I do feel, partly because my career is in writing comics and drawing comics, that this podcast has been weirdly life-changing.
Oh.
Because it's kind of forced me to kind of reevaluate my work, reevaluate comics on a whole, and how to incorporate and maybe make the stuff that I produce better. And also to analyze things a bit closer, because that part of me has kind of dropped off over the years, in which I'm just constantly kind of putting out product, taking in product in order to incorporate it into that product. Yeah, yeah. No, this has been amazing. Like, you guys have opened my eyes to so many new things. And you know, just on a personal level, like, this pandemic's been real shitty. I don't know about you guys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And being able to check in with people who are funny, smart, friendly, like the three of you are three of the best people I know. And being able to check in,
thank you,
once a week and talk about things that we're all passionate about has just been fantastic.
Thank same. You. I feel the same way. That's really,
yeah.
It's been delightful.
But I'm really busy, so I can't join you for season two.
Oh, no.
Part of me really wants to cut the episode there and just put the theme song in.
Yeah, the theme song.
Manga-splaining with Matt Fraction.
Yeah. You do not want that. You do not want that.
What a lovely note to go out on. Thank you all. Yeah, we... This podcast did better than any of us ever thought it was going to do, frankly, and it's because of all of you listening. So thank you so much for listening and downloading and recommending it and sending us nice notes. Like, honestly, we like just hanging out with each other, which is, as Chip said, kind of how this got started. But the fact that people are listening is kind of nice. You know, it's pretty good. Let's all do it again in about a month for season two. I'm Christopher Butcher for Deb Aoki, David Brothers, and Chip Starsky. We'll see you soon. Take care. This has been Mangasplaining, episode number 26, the recap episode. Thanks for listening. For our next episode, we'll be back at the beginning of September with Osamu Tezuka's Phoenix. Want to pick up a copy? Consider supporting your local comic book and manga specialty shop. You can find one near you at comicshoplocator.com. You can also follow along with our complete reading list at mangasplaining.com. Thanks again to DADS for their musical accompaniment this episode.
Hey there!
Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.